usually we get here and we turn on the cameras and we talk and we like hang out and warm up and like, hey, what's up? And today we didn't because Jimmy's got to go to the dentist. So
I got a dentist appointment. And I'm going to be doing a meeting while I'm driving to the dentist on my phone. I told my my meeting participants is that I will be on my phone driving to the dentist. Like, it's okay as long as your connection's good.
Wow.
Yeah. Modern technology. Remember you used to have to have a meeting and it was like really important. You'd have to like make tea.
Send faxes back and forth and talk that way. Yeah.
Get prepared. Put the dog out in the yard. Don't let the rooster out.
Now is the yeah, don't, you know how you have to let the rooster out, you know, for meetings? Is the commercial done? Are they still shooting?
The commercial shoot was done. They came in and jammed for... They started about Tuesday last week, really starting to reset the room, move things around, change things around, and put a bunch of stuff in the barn to make more room, and then jam everything against the wall. I put these machine skates under the pool table, so now the pool table glides around the room like it's on ice. It's pretty cool. And I have it to the side. It only lifts it up just a little bit. It only lifts it up like an inch. So it's very, very stable and not too nerve-wracking to move it around. And they came in on... Wednesday, started making decisions, like hard decisions, came in Thursday and moved everything around physically. We have to shoot this, let's do this. And the prop guys touched everything in my shop, they touched and moved and got the dust out from under, which was cool.
Does that bother you that everything has been touched by...
But I get paid a lot of money for this thing, so I was like, whatever.
Gotcha.
Here for everything.
Yeah.
And I've been going through everything and reorganizing it. There's some stories on Patreon later, but I've been going through and organizing it. And every time I'm like, I'm missing an apple box. Rob's like, oh, it's under the boat. And I'm like, oh, it's over there. And so nothing got taken. Nothing. But there was like 60 people traipsing through my property. And I thought for sure something was going to go missing. We counted the apple boxes. I hit all my technical battery. My batteries were all my gear. Just I didn't even have one battery out. Like I needed to use a screw gun. I needed to borrow one from one of the tech guys because I did not want to leave a battery out. I just knew it would go for a walk. And I hit all my tools and drawers, you know, the ones that I use on a regular. But nothing went missing. They're very good like that. And plus, they were very thankful because they thought my place was very special. And one by one, all the higher-ups, even the people from the company, which is a credit card company. I don't know if I could say it. I've said it on Patreon. So if you want to find out who I'm talking about, go to Patreon. It's all on there. I just don't want to say it out loud and then somebody highlight this clip and yell at me. But it was a very well-known actor that I'm close friends with. So there you go. And he likes boats and wood. And he was looking for a place
more clues.
He was looking for a place to shoot, and he asked me if my place was available. I said, of course. And so he's like, well, I'll connect you to the production company, and they'll do all the dirty details. And if it's not worth your time, don't do it, is what he said. So it was a good excuse to get him back here. He hasn't been back here. He hasn't been here since 2008 when we did a video together about things that float, and that was a long time ago. We did that in 2008, the summer of 2008 into 2009. And we stopped up at the house on the way back from Toronto with the two boat kits. And he was just blown away by the changes. He was here when there was no wraparound porch on the back, when there was no barns, of course, and the driveway didn't go through to the back. So he was here right when I got the house, kind of, that I hadn't made any major changes. So he ended up hanging out after the shoot was all said and done. He had a lot of lines to memorize. It was very high-tech financial verbiage with his own personal delivery. So it's lots of fun to watch that process. They shot on two digital cameras, two very high-tech digital cameras, and an Aeroflex. They all said, all one by one, all the production guys are like, yeah, like film's coming back in a big way. So they did a whole bunch of shooting on a 16-millimeter Aeroflex, which is a very high-tech
commercial.
Camera.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a very high-budget commercial. I'll tell you that much. It's crazy how much money they spent those 2 days. Oh, and then they needed my truck, so they took my truck, put it on a process trailer, which I've come to learn is the actual official name. It's a trailer that has all rails and bars on it so they can attach camera work to it, camera lights. And just like they would put something in a set so they can control the lights with dodges and hoods and tents, they do this to the trailer. I'll send you guys. I've been meaning to send you guys pictures. I just keep forgetting. So my car was put on a process trailer and driven around with the actor in the seat reading the lines through a teleprompter attached to the camera right outside the front window. Crazy. And then they took it off, and we were up on this high road up in the top of the valley near my house. They needed a dirt road, and there was this whole thing where he comes across logs that have fell down on the road, and there's a bunch of lumberjacks there. And I got my friend Chris involved and his crew, and they cut this tree down and pretended like he got involved and with a chainsaw cut it. And it was funny. He kept he kept exercising the chainsaw and starting it, and it would start right up. It's like, okay, take one. He delivers lines, and then it's like a big ta-da, and then he goes to start the chainsaw, and then it's always like in between pistons, so when you go to pull it, the whole thing pulls out of your hand, you know? Yeah. And he did that like three times, and it was such an ego blow if you're like trying to be a man and you go to start a chainsaw, and it's like, and it like pulls out of your hand. But he got three or four good takes, but it took like three takes to get it to stop landing right on its top end where there was like all the compression. Yeah.
I would have assumed that everything would have been storyboarded and figured out before they even showed up. So it sounds like there was a little bit of flexibility on what they were going to shoot.
Yes. Everybody that showed up kept complaining that the script kept changing. I don't know who wrote the script. I have no idea. I know that Nick and his friend tweak it for comedy. Did I say that?
Random celebrity.
Random celebrity and his friend tweak it for comedy. So I don't know who wrote it, but we said it was a lot of technical verbiage in it. And he was adjusting his intonation and his delivery. It's funny to watch him try a few times to get the beats on the comedy where they're supposed to be a laugh. And then you could tell when something hit because there was a tent of people watching, a tent of executives, and you could hear the whole tent laugh on something he said.
How many takes on average for three the major or four. Talent? Three, that's it?
Yeah, three or four. Sometimes and one. And then because they were really tight for time. So if they got it, they talked about it for a second. They go, okay, moving on. Let's go. We don't have time to.
Gotcha.
And it really was only takes were really not necessarily due to the comedy or lack thereof. It was really more just to make sure the technical was so. It was like an infomercial. And I don't think it's going to air on your typical things. It might end up being just an industry digital thing. That's what I overheard somebody say. It's going to be like a digital thing for. So it might leak out in little bits and pieces. They shot enough to make a lot of different parts. There was three storylines that they shot for three separate individual movies that'll be a couple of minutes long.
I guess that makes sense. You see a lot of commercials that are like similar things but different cuts, and I guess they just shoot multiple things at the same time.
But there was a couple guys saying this should have been storyboarded, but it wasn't. And so the art department was a little kerfuffled about all, like, we needed this, and then all of a sudden they're like, we need a magnifying glass, and I gave them the one that I made in the video years ago. It was 10 years ago.
Oh man.
And they're like, this is great, and they put it on the prop cart, and but after everything was said and done, there was like five things I never even touched at the time.
How much time does it take for the celebrity actor? What was his, like, was he there all day? Was it a 2-day shoot?
It was a two-day shoot. He had a heart attack because he's doing another movie somewhere in the world. So he came in that morning, and I knew he was in the trailer. I don't bother him because I know he's got so many lines to read. Even day one, he was walking around reading to himself. He doesn't hide from anybody. He's just walking around everybody, but because he's holding the script, reading and looking into space, everybody knows he's trying to memorize. So nobody's bugging him, and no one's like...
That's the equivalent of walking around with a clipboard. That dude's busy.
Yeah. It's not like everyone's like doing selfies with him. And he got a teleprompter, so he was able to ease it up a little bit because they kept changing the verbiage. So he's like, I can't memorize this stuff fast enough as they need me. So the teleprompter showed up, and he was able to relax a little bit between takes and talk to everybody. And I have one of the boats he built here in the house, and they used it as a prop. So the prop guys pulled it out and put it on set, and they hung my boat from the ceiling to try and create the rowboat I made last year to lower the visibility of a couple of shots that were wide. And they said, we needed just something to frame. So the cinematographer wanted the boat hung. It was really interesting to see when somebody wants to pay for something, there's no expense overlooked. The only casualty of the whole entire event, as far as my world is concerned, was they broke the neon sign. And they broke one piece of neon on the neon sign. They went to grab it, and one of the moving guys grabbed it and pulled it by the neon and broke it right at like eye level and grabbed it and snapped it. And so Derek brought it to his neon. There's a neon guy in Boston, which he just did an Instagram story on. So Derek, it was a good excuse for him to go and make friends with that neon guy. So Derek brought the neon to the neon guy and got a chance to talk to him. And so we're getting that neon piece replaced. It was too far broken to repair it. So it's going to get replaced. And that should be fine. It was $500 for the piece of neon. So they're going to pay for it. And
did you already get paid, or do you get paid sometime in the future?
I get paid in about 6 years from now, I think. I get paid.
Sweet.
That's,
yeah.
That word was so interesting to me.
You know how the corporations go. I did submit my bills and my invoices and everything in my broken neon sign. And they said, yeah, okay. I actually submitted it last night, so we'll see what responses I get today from California. But it was very interesting, and I didn't have a chance to make anything. So if we're looking, what I'm taking this opportunity is to organize my shop. All the sawdust is out because everything got moved. We were able to sweep behind everything. And it looked like all the sawdust was already out, but when they start moving stuff around and these giant clumps of sawdust show up, got all those out, and I did a hard edit, threw a lot of stuff away, and kept a couple of machines in the barn that I don't need right away. I'll need them. If I need them, I can use them there. And last night, you guys will be proud of me, I bought the day before, and they showed up the next day, which was yesterday, I bought two big rolling cabinets from Uline, and they're half the price if you buy them unassembled. So me and Ryan put them together last night, and they're on rolling wheels, and they're cabinets with windows in them, and they're about $500 each. And now I have two rolling cabinets with all my battery-operated tools at the ready, and they're a little flimsy, of course, so I put all the heavy nails and screws at the bottom to keep it a little bit more stable. And now I just got to make some wall space and put them on the wall. But the good thing is they're on wheels. I can put them wherever I want them, in or out of a shot or something like that. I was thought about building them, but I was like, you know what? I could just be done with this by tomorrow night.
Yeah. There's something to that for sure.
And it has a little twist lock. It looks like something you'd see in a science lab. I got two in black, so I'll show those off later. But that really was a good impetus, because I had battery-operated tools in bins on top of bins. And if I needed something, I'd just scurry through the boxes and look for the box with sanders in it, look for the box with grinders in it, and box with nail guns in it. Now it's up and ready to go, which is nice. Something I've been wanting to do. So I don't even know if I'm going to make a video this week. I haven't had a chance to start anything. I've just been organizing and organizing. And then today I have meetings and a dentist. So if I come up with a quick video that I could make tomorrow, I have an idea and maybe working on the slab that I got to play with. That's a quick build. Oh, and I got my stairwell in, my horse barn. I don't know how many people have been following along with that. That was a fun build. I videotaped that. My friend Marcel did it for me. He's a very experienced stairwell maker. So I enlisted him to come here from Ithaca to do it for me. And he did it for me, and he did a fantastic job. 3 days. He was working on it while the shoot was going on. So now I have stairwell to go upstairs. I can cover the hole and get rid of the ladder. That's exciting. It's going to really move things along over there.
Yeah, sure.
So
being able to actually get up there to do things really makes it easier to do things.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I'll send you guys pictures while we talk. But that's it. So I don't know if I'm making a video this week. The one interesting thing is I got to exercise my little green Chevy. I have a 1969 Chevy C10 that I bought on eBay many, many years ago. And it's got 42,000 miles on it. It's well-worn, but it's not a rot bar. It's not rotted at all. It's in really good, well-worn. It's like good for its age, you know. It's 1969, so it's 55 years old. And they loved it, so they wanted to use it for the shoot. And they said, do you think it'll make it up to the hill? I was like, I haven't started the thing in 2 years. I hope so. And I started it. Early on in the beginning of this whole process, I fixed the muffler. I welded in a pipe where the muffler used to be, just to make the smoke go out the back, not necessarily into the cab. And it's very loud and obtrusive, but it ran the whole time. I drove it all the way up to the hill and back, and the brakes and the shifting, and even the actor drove it. And it was funny. I texted him. I was like, hey, everybody wants to know if you can drive this car. And I sent him a picture of it. And he goes, are you kidding me? He goes, did you ever meet me? That's what his answer was. He goes, I learned how to drive on one of those things. And he was fine with it. He was having fun with it, tooling around. At one point, there was a thing for him to drive completely out of sight. And we're all up on this hill. There's like 30 people and cameramen, and the guys who were in the sawmill were kind of annoyed because it's taken way too long. And they load the log onto his truck, and he drives away. And he drives completely out of sight, which is like a mile and a half away. He wanted to be completely out of the camera view. the walkies didn't work, and everyone's like, is he okay? No power steering. To do a 53-point turn on this car, it's impossible, but it's doable. And we waited for like a solid 5 minutes, and someone's like, I hear the car coming. I'm like, is it? I don't hear it. And then the big dust cloud, I mean, he appears in the distance like the hero, and then he comes up, and then I was like, okay, I go, leave it, I'll turn it around, because you have to turn it around and put it back in position for take two. And he does like a 50-point turn. Like, what is that guy? Everybody always made the joke. The guy who does a little tiny tight turn in the movie. What was that called?
Austin Mr. Powers? Bean?
He did the Austin Powers thing. And he goes to back into position, and the car stalls. And while the car stalls, somebody goes, we got it. And everybody cheered, because they're like, now we can leave this area. And he looks, he goes, what did they say? I said, they got it. You don't have to do this again. After he did a 65-point turn to turn the car around and get it back in position. And yeah, that was it. So I got to exercise that car. So now I have a renewed interest in my little green Chevy, which I thought would never run well again.
That's cool.
Yeah, it only stalled if you just were fiddling with the gas. I had thought it was just not going to run just because it hasn't run in so long. But that's cool.
Sweet.
I'm done talking.
Well, David, how did the commercial shoot go at your house?
It was great. I can't name the actor that was here, but it was amazing.
But his name rhymes with Hugh Blackman or Brian Blenolds.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Which you love Ryan Reynolds, right?
Oh, boy, do I.
I don't get it.
Please note the sarcasm.
My brother did a movie with Ryan Reynolds when he was coming up. They did like a little independent movie together.
No, I don't have anything against Ryan Reynolds. He's just everywhere.
That's all. I remember watching Miss Congeniality. I think it was the second one, like a couple of years ago. And then all of a sudden, your brother is in it. And I had absolutely no idea. I'm pretty sure that's John DiResta. I'm not 100%. And so I'm looking it up on my phone. It is. And I had to text you right away. I'm like, this should just be information that we all know.
Yep.
That's pretty funny.
So this week, this is so Pachuto-like, but I made this like wooden frame to hold my keyboard. And then I have this little USB thing that's like a shortcut for all my editing software stuff.
Oh, that's sexy.
I framed it in walnut, of course, and it's got a little pencil tray on top. So this will sit on my desk. And then it also has a little matching wrist rest with some orange felt on there. So that's what I'm working on. And it was one of those kind of design on the fly projects, and I'm going to consider it a prototype. It came out really good. It really screams to be made out of a CNC because of all the weird tight things, but I made it all by hand, and then I'll use it for a few months and then see what I like and what I don't like, and then maybe remake it with more precise tools like a CNC and a laser. So, yeah.
I just had an idea for that. Not that you asked for ideas. You probably don't.
I am asking for ideas.
You know,
interesting thing, you had really tight clearance around that particular keyboard.
Yeah.
And if that were a product, you would have people wanting different keyboards. Obviously, if you use a standard like the Apple keyboard or something, you don't really have to worry about that. But you could cut the tray and like the meat of the tray and the bottom of it with a CNC with enough clearance in the inside of it to house a few different keyboards, and then have like a bezel that goes over the top that's the same material that gets dropped on to actually outline the things that you're putting in there. So you have a thin layer of specific over a thick layer of general.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because it's got little holes in the back so I can pop out the different pieces.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
So,
man, so those are just tension fit in there?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's actually made, you probably can't see it, but it is made with two layers. So there's a base layer, and then the top layer. And the top layer is all cut to shape, and then they're glued together. And then there's also a slight angle on there. And it was a way of, because there's a lot, it looks in person, it looks more complicated than what it actually is. So if you just make everything in layers and glue it all together, you can make complicated shapes like that. Yeah.
Hmm. Awesome. You're muted.
So that's that's a good idea. I've thought about, because the Logitech keyboard that I'm using is a pretty common one, so I've had thoughts of drawing up the files and just having a frame for the Logitech keyboard that doesn't have the loop deck thing that I use for editing, and possibly selling that. But
it looks like an elaborate bandsaw box is what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way, yeah.
But I'm not into products as much as you guys.
I had thought of doing something similar, because I have these little trays. And we've talked about these trays before, but these little like nesting trays that I made and stuff a while back. And so this sits in front of my my keyboard, and so I just have different things in here, and I can pop these little trays out and, you know, swap them and stuff. And I've thought about making that type of thing that you made for the keyboard with those things built into the back side of it.
Mm-hmm.
That would give you kind of a catch-all right behind your keyboard. The problem with that is then it is, the depth of it is stuck. So if I never need to move my keyboard back, the whole mechanism is thicker versus right now it's all separate, so I can kind of move it out of the way. But that would be another thing you could do. Instead of having the loop deck stuff on the side, if somebody doesn't want that, you could have catch-all stuff on the back side of it, so it's not in the way of a mouse or whatever.
Since I was designing on the fly, it took a couple different turns. I thought about having the loop deck portion of it completely separate and then just magnetized, because I don't use the loop deck every day. And then the wrist rest that I made was attached to it, but I find but it adds another couple inches to the front of it, and I decided I cut it off so I could decide to use it or not use it, because desk space is a premium, especially front and back. And so, and it just sits in front, and it could be magnetized to it. So it could be a whole modular thing. And in the video, I talk about how we've talked about this here on the show, how being a YouTube woodworker, we don't really get a chance to do iterations, because we think the audience is expecting something new every time. And I'm like, I am going to revisit this in the future, and we'll see where it's at. And so,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that would do video wise to come back to something like in the near future and say, you know, this is version 2 of that thing, or,
yeah,
you know, this video is a couple of versions. Maybe you build a couple of versions over time, and then you collate them together into a single video that's about that iteration or something.
I think if you're looking for performance, the best way to do it is film the video over a year and then you actually get to see that. That's really, really hard to do, and props to people who do that kind of stuff. But
I saw something recently, I can't remember what it was, but it was like that, where they had been working on something in the background for like a year, 2 years or something. And then you just put it all together. I don't know that I have the stick-to-itiveness of that, whatever the word would be there, to keep going on something in the background that just never gets seen or never gets, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like a Karma Gear.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not doing it in the background. I'm doing a little video at a time. I couldn't just do the whole car in the background and be like, hey, look, I've got a 35-hour video that's me doing an entire car that I've been working on for 5 years, you know.
And you age throughout the beginning, from the beginning to the end.
I do that.
Hair goes gray.
Videos anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, I had a question, and now I can't think of it. Oh, yeah. Rental house. Have you done anything? Like, we haven't heard about the rental house in a while, or projects for it or anything.
It's a slow-moving project. It basically comes down to, I don't have the time or money. There's more things that need to be fixed up before it's rentable. If I want the vision that I originally had of it being like a gallery and kind of an experience, so much more work has to be done to the house to do that. And that takes time and money. So
yeah.
It's a slow process. But in the meantime, the Chevy is over there. So otherwise, I would have been paying for storage for that. And then I do have the second little budget shop over there, which we film every once in a while. So it's not like a total, it's not like it's just a money suck and it's, you know, I'm not making any money off of it. It's still, it's being used. It's just, I was really hoping by November, December to have it rentable. That's not even in the realm of possibility now.
Mm. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, plans change for that. I was just curious. We hadn't heard about it in a while.
Yeah, so if there's any big-time sponsors out there listening and wants to just dump some money on me, I'm open.
Hey, me too. You know, just throw that out there. Cool. Well, I have been doing, I don't know, a little bit of everything the last couple of weeks. A lot going on right now. This is a really busy time of year for my family. It's preseason for all of the school and the school sports stuff. And so we have like a kid in marching band, which is a ridiculous amount of time. We have two kids in high school soccer, which they do two-a-day practices, you know, early morning and in the evening. We have another one that's doing travel soccer that's starting up. So our time in mostly in driving people places is like ridiculous, and it's not going to relent for a few months, I don't think. So that's been not bad in any way. Like, it's actually really cool to be at a place in life where I can say, like, my priority is to make sure that all the kids get to do the things that they want to do right now, you know? And so that's pretty awesome, but it's also disruptive. It just makes it hard to, like, get in a flow and be really productive throughout the day because it's like, well, yeah, I got to go pick up so-and-so from work, and then I got to take them to their practice, and then I got to make sure that I get the other one's lunch before they go to the, you know? It's kind of like that. So my time feels a little bit more broken up lately, and I still, you know, I've talked for a while about redoing the storage part of the shop, and like I made a bunch of progress in the shop, kind of rebuilding two areas, but then the kind of third big area has not had any attention at all. And so it's just, it's like this looming giant garbage pile. It's not garbage, but it feels like a garbage pile in the back of the room that I just got to do something with. So, you know, I have a few things like that I just haven't quite gotten to and stuff. But I have started I'm filming a really silly project that I don't want to talk about yet, but it'll be the next video that comes out.
Is that the one you sent us a clip of the other day? Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's we're going to finish it today. And I'm almost positive it's going to get destroyed in the final shot of the video. I just think that's what's going to happen, not because that's my intent. So I'm doing that. We'll talk about that maybe next week. I've started 3D scanning. I think I showed you guys this 3D scanner that I got a while back.
Yeah, that's cool.
This is the Mirico by RevoPoint. And I got it because they sent it to be clear. But I had been looking at different ones for a while because I wanted to start working on the interior of the Green Land Cruiser. It needs a console, and I can definitely cardboard up, you know, some sort of a template to make something in there. But I was like, this would be a perfect example of being able to scan a really weird shaped area to try to build something to fit into, because it's in between the two front seats. There's these strange rails that it would have to mount to. There's this weird cavity underneath it that's not usable, but also maybe usable. And so I've been in the last couple of days finally getting into trying to scan the specific area to then model something on top of. And I'm learning a whole lot. Like Monday, I learned a huge amount about the process of scanning something, and it's way bigger than I thought it was going to be. I kind of assumed that so I've got this little toy here that I'm holding up. If you're scanning this thing, like, and you can get all the way around it, or you can put this on a turntable, then you're scanning and you're getting all of this information and it starts to go around, and then you build the outside of this entire shape, and then you can't scan the feet or something because it's sitting on something. So there's this little area that it can't scan. There's some built-in software that will allow you to take the rest of a good scan and it'll fill in the parts that you can't deal with. But then when you move out from scanning a thing to scanning an area, that there's no way to scan around it in spherical space, you know, then there's a lot of area that doesn't have scan data. And so it has to try to figure out, if it needs to, it has to figure out what to do with that space. And the process of taking this point cloud that it makes, these little individual dots, turning it into faces, and then trying to decide how those faces are connected to each other, where are the gaps, yeah. what is the thing that is there and isn't there. There's software that does a lot of this stuff for you, but I've watched a few videos of people doing this on cars specifically to try to see, you know, how they were doing it. And it's like really complex. It's not complex. It's a lot of steps. You got to like run this thing and it turns it into a mesh. And then you go back and you pick all the points that are kind of out of place. And then you run it again. And then you got to make some choices about which ones are important. Then you run it again, you know. And it's just, you can kind of keep going depending on how much data you need. And then, I never thought about this before, but this is a pretty substantial part of it. You have to decide if the thing you're scanning is a shape that you need to have to print or if it's a reference shape. So I watched this guy print, scan a quarter panel of a car. So it's a pretty big area, right? And he needed all of the data around, like, it folds into the hood area. And there's holes there, and there's a little rollover and a lip and all that type of stuff. There's also stuff underneath the wheel well, how it rolls over in an opposite direction. So he's scanning this whole big thing and wrapping around it and getting all this detail. And as I'm watching him do this, he's explaining all the details of what he's doing. I'm like, what is this guy going to like? What's he doing with this 3D model? Is he going to print a quarter panel? Or because you don't really need it. If you're going to make your own, if you're going to shape it with metal, you don't need to have a perfect scan of it. You need a few details. So he gets to this end of this video, and it was really, it taught you a lot about scanning. But then he was like, well, I'm not going to use this anyway. So, you know, I just wanted to make the point. I'm like, well, the process is very different if you're going to make the thing or if you're referencing the thing. And so I learned a whole bunch of stuff that I actually don't really need yet because, in my case, I'm only referencing a couple of points. I just need to know how far and how off vertical axis these things are so that I can build something to connect them. Jimmy?
Is it possible in this day and age to take, you hold up a little figurine, scan that figurine as it sits, walk around it, then lay it on its back and scan it again, and does the computer plug it together? Will it know, okay, this is the same shape I just scanned, let me connect them and then meld them together? So you can
it pick can.
Is that possible?
It is possible. So at least in this, I've only used this one scanner and its software, so I don't know about anything else. But when you're scanning something, whether you're flipping it on its back or you're just like, you shoot one side of it and then you pause and then you reposition yourself to start shooting again, it has to have reference points. So there has to be some notable, you know, thing on it that it can see, oh yeah, that's that thing I shot last time. That's my reference point to start building.
That's what I'm saying.
Mesh,
if you
from.
Completely change its orientation to space, will it also do the same thing?
So if you had a reference point, like looking at this guy, his eyes are a contrasting shape or color to the thing. So that would be a reference point probably. And then when you lay it down, it's still going to see that reference point. And then that gives you a place to start. And then you can start building a new model around it. So yeah, I think you probably could. Mm-hmm. Never tried it, so I don't really know. But one of the things that this guy made sure to talk about was, you know, this big quarter panel, that's a big space. And you have to reposition your body several times to scan this thing because you're maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet from it. And so he would say, you know, I'm going to make sure that when I stop scanning here, I move to a point to where I still have this edge or this detail as my reference thing so that when I start scanning again, it knows where it is in space relative to the quarter panel. And that's something that had given me trouble in my tests beforehand, and I just didn't realize that you needed to keep that thing on screen and kind of try to get it, you know, give it something to know. So that's been like a big learning thing the last few days, something totally new that I'm trying to figure out how to do and trying to figure out how much of it I need to know how to do right now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really need to know how to get printable detail from something.
Wait until like 10 years when AI is in there and AI can fill in all the gaps. So it could be like, oh, you're scanning a 1965 Pontiac whatever. And here's what I know about that. And then here's what how yours is different. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably a lot closer than you think.
Probably. Yeah.
Apparently, there are some, I think we've talked about this already, but there are some AI scanning tools that are already doing some of that kind of fixing for you and stuff. So that's the big thing that I'm trying to figure out right now, because I want to build this kind of console, and then I'm thinking through, you know, it's not a huge space, but there's enough space to do a couple cup holders and like a latched top area, you know, just a normal console. So I'm trying to figure out something to make it interesting, something to that would be kind of an interesting feature. And I found, actually behind me, you might be able to see them, those little plastic bins right there. There's clear plastic bins that are about 5 inches wide and about 10 inches long, 5 inches tall. And they have little handles built into them. No idea what they're for, but I just saw them at the store. And it got me thinking, like, what if you took that and you made the console so that that could drop on the inside of it? And you have a plastic liner on the inside of the console that could then be filled with ice, and you could put, you know, water bottles or whatever in. So the console is not a freezer, but just like a cooler. Yeah. But, you know, you could like, I'm going to go for a ride in this car that doesn't have any AC, and I'm going to dump some ice in the console, put some bottles of water in there, and then go. And then when I go to the thing, I just like lift that thing out and take it with me. So
My truck, when you open up the tailgate, there is a storage compartment on the bed. So when you open that up, you can, you know, right now there's a, you know, I keep jumper cables and just various tarps and tie downs and stuff in there. But it is made to also be a cooler. So, because it's got a drain hole on the bottom when you need that, so you can dump some ice and then throw your beer in there and celebrate America.
I do have enough holes in the bottom of my car. Maybe I could play into that and just run the drain line out.
Yeah.
And just like leave it in there. Huh. I legitimately have a lot of holes in the bottom of my car, so I might do that. That would be funny.
Yeah.
Just have a little hose going out there and a little valve you could just turn to dump it out. Anyway, so that's what I'm kind of working on. And then, you know, just other little things. Trying to start making progress on this pile of life that I gotta like clean up.
Pile of life.
Jimmy, you said something earlier, and I've actually been thinking about this, and so we don't have a topic, we didn't come up with anything, and we're hard time today, but have you guys ever thought about taking a sabbatical?
Yes.
Like, I guess specifically from content.
Because,
you know, I know you can't, but have you ever thought about that as a goal or as an option or as a...
Yeah, I have. You know, Howard always says it, my business partner. People don't know Howard is my business partner. He's never on camera, but he's real. He said, the goal is to get you making videos because you want to, not because you have to.
Yes.
And he's been saying that for a long time now, and we're not really there, but I don't have to work as hard as I do, but I do it because I want to keep busy. It's also a perfect way to avoid other people. Say, I'm so busy, I got so much work to do. And then just when they see you online producing lots of work, they're like, I'm so glad I didn't bother you. So I would like to maybe do a sabbatical and just focus on a couple things. And at my age, you know, it's probably not too far out of the cards. I didn't work last week as far as my job is concerned, and it didn't work much this week as far as my job is concerned. So that might be my toe touch into a sabbatical. 2 weeks, no video, maybe.
Well, and that's kind of what got me thinking about it, what brought it up today, is because, you know, you said you didn't get anything done, but you got paid a lot, I would assume. I don't know how much you got paid. You got paid a lot last week.
Yeah.
And that's like the perfect storm of you get paid an excess amount of what you normally get paid, which buys you some time to not have to work to get paid for a little bit.
Yep.
And that's like, you know, the question is within us, all of us who have this kind of drive to just do things all the time and like be productive. And it's a habit that we both like, but also a habit that we've built. We have to be productive to make money. That's like the way it works. So if you're in the position to then, hey, I've got some extra money coming in, I could take off a couple of weeks and, like, for your own health, for rest, for whatever, you could just, like, disappear for a limited set amount of time and then plan to come back, you know? Is that something that you would like to do, either one of you?
I wouldn't mind doing that.
I think I like the idea of it. I think in the middle of it, I would feel like...
panic.
Yeah, I would too. Panic would set in. I'm like, the world is moving on without me. When I come back, I'm going to be behind. Nobody's going to know who I am, which I know isn't the case, but that's how my brain is going to work. I really, really like making stuff and then sharing it. Like, that just drives me every single day. But I think about that break all the time. But I would still make stuff. I'd still, like, I've been trying to find, like, a new 3D printer, and I've been working on some art pieces that's going to be incorporated into wood, and I'm doing it totally off camera. I'm like, this is me. I enjoy that, and I wish I had more time to do that, and I wish I had more brain space to focus on that stuff, because I think, yeah, I would get a lot better at that stuff. But that stuff doesn't pay the bills. That stuff doesn't push the business, keep the business moving forward. So I don't have the brain space to get better at those things.
It's interesting, though, because that is the thing that I think, at least you and I don't know if Jimmy deals with this or not, but, like, there are a lot of ideas that are not video ready, and you have to, they compete with the things that you know you can do to make money, even though those things maybe could make money if they had enough attention. Like, do you feel like those skills and specific pieces of art that you could develop, if they had time, could they actually pay for themselves?
Yes. I envision this future of, like, one day I won't be a content creator anymore, and I'll just be an artist, and I will sell things that don't have a purpose for a living. That's kind of like the dream old man Pachuto stuff. So I want to get better at these things, so these things could actually make money and be desirable to other people.
I know a couple of fine artists, and they're friends of ours from college and stuff, and they make a living painting and shooting photography, and then they sell those things. And it's interesting because their perspective, hang on, my kids are being very loud and coming down the stairwell while I'm recording. They spend months painting and painting, and, like, almost they, like, disappear, and they see people, but, you know, publicly they don't do anything. They're not on social media. They're not, like, showing progress shots of all the paintings all the time. And they're just, like, they're gone.
Immersed.
And they focus really hard on painting absolutely unbelievable stuff. It's just, it's wild. And then after 6 months of that, they have this show's worth of work. You know, they've got 10, 20 paintings that are, every one is just, it's like, I don't even get it. I don't know how one exists, and they have 20 of them. And then they hope that at that show, that those things will sell enough to pay for the last 6 months or 9 months or whatever of their life that they spent not making any money. And it's such, yeah, that, like, big swing and big risk. And, you know, it works for them because they're incredibly talented, but that's the thing that, like, I don't think I'll speak for myself. I don't know how I would be able to do that because part of it is I don't know that I trust my output enough to know that it would be, that the payoff would be there. You know what I mean?
Well, musicians and bands do this all the time. They disappear, true, and all of a sudden, hey, a new Beyonce record dropped today, and everybody's just, their minds are blown. Right. But I don't know how to not share something, because, like, if I make something,
you get itchy.
If I make something and I'm really, really proud of it, I want to show it to the world right freaking now, not wait 6 months for a show, you know? It's just a totally different mindset that I'm not used to. And this is all because of social media. Social media.
Get itchy.
Yeah.
Well, last night I was fiddling around. I've been cleaning out my dad's house here and there, and I've been saving relics. And one of the things I saved was this thing called the Spirulator, and I did a story on it last night.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, that was an invention I did in the 90s when I had a little toy company called Goldfish Toys with my brother and my partner, Wayne. And in Goldfish Toys, we came up with a bunch of products, and the company itself never did well, but a couple of the products did well, so well that we were able to sell the product out of the company to other companies. That's why it's patented under 4Kids when you see the Instagram post. There was a company that did the gurgling guts. And it was funny. It's been sitting around, and last night, Rachel and my buddy Ryan were having dinner, and Ryan goes, "You should do a story on this. This is so cool." I'm like, no one cares. He goes, no, do a story on it. And so right there and then, where we were having dinner, I did a little bit of a Google search the patent and did it. And talking about what you think, like social media is, you got to make the decision. Do I want to show it to her or do I not want to show it to her? It's like the best performing reel I've done in months. People are so curious about it. It's over 100,000, which for me is a big deal. And it's funny. And everyone's like, I want to see more of the patents. I want to see more of the stuff you did. But it's like so far in the rearview mirror, I forget about it. This was supposed to connect to something we just talked about. I don't know if it did or not. But the idea of utilizing social media and running to it to show off is basically the reason I thought of that.
So I struggle with this a little bit because I'm probably in the wrong industry because like, I have the opposite feeling about, and maybe this has happened over time, I have the opposite feeling about social media. Like, it's almost, it feels like a chore to show off the things that I make. I know I need to. That's like marketing. That's like part of the thing. But the whole sabbatical, to come back to that thing, if I had enough money to take time to just
hide,
not hide, But
just be just to live not a life feel without like social media.
Well, but to not feel like I had to show things off to get to make a living. You know what I mean? Like that sounds pretty nice to me.
Well, after we've been all doing it for 10 plus years, it would be nice to take a little bit of a break from that.
The bigger thing of the sabbatical idea is that there's all these little things in the same way that those art pieces can't compete with your time right now to make money. I have a bunch of just like functional, like this pile of stuff in my shop that I was talking about. I can't prioritize that cleanup and organization over, I've got to make a video for the thing because the video pays for the house and for the kids and for the, you know. And so the whole idea of the sabbatical would be like, yeah, if there was a, in magical world, if there was like this influx of money that would cover the next, even a month, you know, like, man, could you imagine having a month of free time where you could just like knock stuff off the list, clean out the boxes, mm-hmm. organize the shelves.
What if the sabbatical
pressure wash the house, you know, that kind of just like
did nothing. What if you were forced to do nothing? You were not allowed to touch anything to move anything forward. You have to stop today. You take 30 days off, and wherever you stop, that's where you return. What about not?
I mean, that's a different thing, I think, because that's not really what I would use the time for. Although, if let's take that scenario. So, if I had to like walk out my door right there, lock the door, and then be gone for a month, yes, I could do that.
Yeah,
like, I would be because. This has happened already a couple of times this summer. I went on two different trips and I was gone for a week. And each time, the only reason I was anxious to get back was not because like there's work left to be done. It was like, I would like my bed again, or like, like some quiet would be cool. I'm around a lot of people, that kind of a thing. But as far as like, we went camping and we did, you know, the trip in Tennessee that I was talking about before, we did work down there for other people and we camped and we swam in rivers and we went rafting and it felt like 6 months of being off of work in a week. Like it was fantastic. And, You know, to be perfectly honest, all of this type of thought worries me about myself a little bit, because I'm like, man, I really enjoy doing other things, and these other things don't pay for life. You know, is there, like, I don't know. It's just,
well, I think no matter what you do for a living, everybody likes doing other things.
Well, yeah, it's true.
And wants to do other things that don't pay for life.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You should maybe, well, you know what? This is a bad suggestion. I was going to say, try and do some of these other things, make content out of these other things. You guys both have second channels.
Yeah, that's a dangerous thing, though. I think it's a dangerous thing because what people often do that, and then that hobby ends up becoming another job. It becomes another thing to keep up with. And
that's why I used to vlog, obviously, but I keep thinking I'm going to vlog a little bit on Patreon, but it takes so much time. But I just try and keep it all maker-centric, no matter what it is. Everything.
Yeah, yeah, I think I'm enjoying more and more. Like, as an example, I really like Lego, you know, and I love building stuff. I love playing, and just, like, it's a total separate mind thing to just, like, check out of life and then just, like, whether I'm following instructions or just building and playing, it's a different kind of release for my brain to just, like, sit down and do that. And I've often thought, yeah, but if I made videos about that, then I could get paid to do it. Mm-hmm. But then I don't think I would feel the same way about it. I think I would, you know, it would just be another channel to run. And so
I do a lot of relaxing at night when, you know, Kelly goes to bed at 10. I usually go to bed around midnight. During those 2 hours, there's usually a laptop on my lap, and that is the sketching things on there, or I'm making music or whatever. And of course, I've always had the thought of, like, oh yeah, this could be a video. I could get paid to do this. But then that changes how I approach what I'm doing. I'm no longer relaxing and just sketching. Now, if I was going to record this, then I got to think about, like, oh, camera angles and lighting and screen captures, and all of that slows down the process and makes the creative part of it completely different. And so I want to turn everything into content, but there's not enough of me to do that.
It's interesting. Some people who make videos are really good at making the pieces of the video not every step. Like, that stuff, the screen capture and the thought process and the, you know, like, everybody does it differently. I'm the same way in that, yeah, if I'm going to make a video about this, I want to capture all the stuff, so we've got a lot to work with. But some people are really good at leaving that development stuff off camera and turning the video into the showcase for the final product rather than for the process. But, you know, I mean, that just depends on how you want to get to it.
I think, you know, I think anything that I make, whether it is a outfeed table or it's a piece of art and everything in between, I think there's a potential really good performing video for every single thing. It's just how you... The hard part is, how do you approach that? How do you turn that into something interesting? And I honestly feel all of that stuff could be million view videos. You just have to figure out what angle it is. And that's the trick of being a creator, is what's your angle? What's unique? What makes this clickable?
Yeah.
It's getting harder and harder.
Yeah. I still enjoy it, but it is getting harder and harder.
So just out of curiosity, go back to the sabbatical thing. If somebody gave you $50,000 and they're just like, I'm going to give you $50,000 if you are off social media, you're not making videos, you know, there's no output, content output for a month, what would you do with that month?
We'd go away. We'd find a place on a lake and Airbnb or travel, we would go away.
I would just and organize would, the house. That's all I would do.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. You would, so David, you would be good with, like, being, like, locking the door and walking away from everything for, if it was paid for, mm-hmm. for, you know, like, you wouldn't feel that pull back to being productive?
I could handle 30 days. 60 days? Okay. Probably not. But I could handle 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jimmy, if your house was already organized, if somebody said, I'm gonna give you $50,000 and organize your house while you don't work for a month, what do you do?
I'd probably go for a road trip and look for antique cars or something like that. Or machines.
There you go. Yeah.
I actually went yesterday morning. I didn't do any social media on this because I just didn't. I just went into my own private Idaho. I hopped in my car yesterday morning at 8 o'clock. I had to go to the bank. And then from the bank, I drove 100 miles into Connecticut to look at a 1970 Chevy tow truck that was parked in the weeds for 1,000 years. The guy says 2 years, but he's totally lying. It's been sitting there for probably 20 years. The gas tank smelled like dried turpentine. Did not smell like recent gas. I mean, I know I have enough vehicles around here. I know what 2-year-old gas smells like. That was not 2-year-old gas. So I passed on it, but I'm looking for a project. I'm looking for an antique tow truck, and a couple people sent me old 50s cars. Thank you very much. It's cool. And I'm looking for a good project that's not a rot box. The reason I didn't take this car, obviously, it's been sitting, so I know what I'm up against. But when I opened the door on both sides, the fender drooped. So that means that the whole firewall's rotted on both passenger sides. So when I opened the door and you could see the fender just kind of flex a little bit. Your fender's not supposed to move at all when you open the door. But it was cool looking. It's exactly the type of texture I'm looking for. So that type of stuff really turns me on. So I spent the entire day yesterday. I got back here at 3 o'clock and I started putting together the cabinets I got in from Uline that I was talking about. And I did that till dinner, and then we had dinner and then answered some emails and went to bed. But the idea of searching and hunting is fun. When I drove through, I can't remember the name of the state. It was Montana. When I drove through Montana a couple years ago, there was so many cool old Chevy trucks just sitting out. So if I had I have this fantasy of driving to Montana and buying like three or four Chevy trucks that are just sitting out. There's so many Chevy trucks in Montana just sitting out, unused. You could tell it's not registered because maybe the tires are flat, but the cars are in perfect condition up there, weather worn, which is my luck. So I don't know. I'd probably go on a search if I had nobody to answer to, nothing to do. I'd just hop in my truck and just go for a drive.
I think that's a good exercise to think about, because and when I think about that myself, I immediately start piling on, well, but there's soccer, school, you know, but like all these other, but I think it's a good exercise to think about, because we get into this habit, all of us, every single person gets into this habit of like, well, life is this way. I've built my life to this thing. I have to do these things to make that life work. But when it comes down to it, ultimately, like, you know, we can decide where the priorities are and prioritize what about our life should be and what doesn't need to be. And like, you know, even thinking about my kids, I would, if I had that scenario, I would rent some sort of big RV type thing. We would all hop in and we would go national parks. We would just go see the country. We live in a beautiful, gigantic country, and I've barely seen any of it. My kids have seen less of it. And just go and, like, just explore it and enjoy it and not have an agenda, not have anything to do. My immediate response to that internally is like, yeah, but they have stuff to do, and they have school, and they have all these things. But, like, we get one shot at this. Like, why not go do the things? Why not go, you know, for the sake of being in school and for the sake of paying for a bunch of stuff that you couldn't take on a trip like that with you anyway? And I don't know, like, we have a lot of freedom to actually make the life that we want. You know, obviously we have to pay for it and things, but it's an interesting exercise, I think, to think about what you could do if you didn't have to worry about it, because it kind of exposes what you really want, what you really, you know, with all needs aside, what would you really do? And if you find something there in that space, I think moving toward that in some way is actually a pretty cool thing to do. But
yeah, yeah. I really enjoy traveling around and driving and looking for stuff. Rob and I, the other day, we drove way out to with Ryan Smith, recovered an old printing press on Sunday. So we had the whirlwind of the shoot, and then it just dropped dead short, stopped on Saturday night. Nick hung out for a couple of hours. We had some pizza and a couple of drinks and
random celebrity. You can
random celebrity.
Oops. Nick,
not the guy from the shoot. Not
Nolte. Again, Nick. Nicholas Nolte. Celebrity.
And we had some pizza, had some, you know, just catching up. And then the next day, me and Rob got up and hopped in a truck with Ryan Smith, who came here from Ohio. This was a plan that was already in place. And we drove to pick up an old print press, an old Vandercook print press that was in some random tiny little barn across the most rocky terrain you could possibly imagine. And so we got that out of there, helped Ryan get it in the truck, and he drove back to Ohio. He's putting it back together. I've reposted some of his videos. But during the ride, Rob and I were just jonesing, like staring at every backyard. Like, there's a truck. There's a truck. There's an old crane. This is that. And that kind of stuff is really fun. That hunt is definitely something that I have a fever for. And it's getting worse as I get older. It's been my whole life, but it's getting worse.
But see, that's an interesting thing.
Now that I know, I have like no fear of knocking on anybody's door, and I have no limitations. Like, I can spend like $2,000 on like a pile of junk. Back in the day, like, I still have the mentality of a teenager. I'm like, God, I hope they don't want more than $300 for that, because I can't afford it.
That's an interesting thing, though, because that hunt is something that you enjoy.
It's exciting. I do.
And you don't even necessarily have to, speak for myself. I really enjoy the hunt of finding rare toys and stuff. I don't really want the toys. I don't want to keep them. But I find them for my friends who collect.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you take a thing like that that you really enjoy and figure out how to turn that into the job, that into the hunt is the thing that makes you money. You don't even have to fix the car. You don't have to keep the cars, although you probably would. But, you know, you could be the person, the hunter, that goes to find the things and gets them to the people who don't have time to go find the things. But anyway, if you have to go soon, we should probably wrap the show up, because we still have to do after show, which is for the Patreon supporters, who are awesome. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon that supports the show, that makes it possible for us to hang out, think out loud. We are very grateful for the support, especially the top supporters. They've been around for a long time, and they're very consistent, and they go above and beyond. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative.
Thank you,
but
guys.
But also, people like, let's see, who haven't I? This is a cool name. Where'd it go? Rocco Perugini. I probably said that wrong, but that's a cool name. I like that. Yeah, but thanks, Rocco, for the support. They all get the after show, which is a separate podcast of us talking about separate stuff. I'll tell you about that project I've been working on in this one, give you guys an update on that one. And that is only through Patreon. So you go to patreon.com/makingit, join at any level, get the after show. I've got a fun one to recommend this week, but I'm going to let you guys go first. David, what you got?
I was struggling to find something, so I think the most interesting video I saw in the past week is by Phil Edwards, and it's called When America Broke the Olympics. This is about the 1980 Summer Olympics in Moscow that there was a boycott on. Phil just has a super awesome channel. I'm not sure what to... kind of like journalism, kind of historian type stuff, but he has a very good, cool perspective on things.
Cool. And we didn't talk about your newest video, by the way, this week, but I really liked it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I have the civil rights lawyer. You know, I'm a lawyer on behind the scenes, right? You guys all know that, right? I'm studying to get my law degree from my.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. No, I really delve into a lot of the lawyer stuff. Of course, I've talked about Legal. You know, Devin is a fan of ours, and we like him. And the civil rights lawyer has popped up in the last couple of years. He's doing really well, and he's really smart. He's in John Bryan, West Virginia, and he goes over cases and talks about people's civil rights and how they're being violated. And he is an actual working lawyer, so he goes over some of his clients' cases. So check him out. Civil rights lawyer. He's really been popping, so you might already know him if you're into this thing.
Mine is called Too Many Zoos. You guys ever heard of Too Many Zoos?
No.
Sounds familiar.
So there's this band, and it was a random, like, YouTube just served it up. This one video, and some of the videos don't do a whole lot for me, but there's a couple of them that are fantastic. And it's a band with Barry sax player, baritone sax player, a trumpet player, and a guy that plays a drum kit that he's wearing. So it's like a marching bass drum and a bunch of other stuff on it. So he's playing the whole drum kit. And it's like jazzy, gritty, horn. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But they've got a really funny style, and they dance while they're playing this stuff. There's one of these videos where they're in the subway platform in New York City at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they start playing, and then the train comes in, and they get on the train while they're playing. And this is all like single shot. You know, they get on the train. The camera gets on in a different doorway. It follows them in. They play all the way to the next stop, and then they get off. And this is like one long jam session through this thing in and out of the subway train. And I guess they're just like buskers in New York City.
I've seen that, but I didn't know what that was called. I've seen that, those videos. It's funny.
And one of the best ones is like the car alarm. So they're in this parking lot, and the guy runs over and like breaks into a car, and it sets off the car alarm, and it's just like honk, honk on a beat, and they start playing to the beat. It's fantastic. So go check out Too Many Zoos.
With a Z.
Yeah. Z-O-O-Z. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
That's it. All right.
That's it. Awesome. I had something, but I forgot it. Oh, okay. I'll remember it in the after show.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.